So we are continuing our series that we started a few weeks ago. After so long being forced to think about how we do church, think inwardly, we are starting this series on everyday mission, reminding us, encouraging us to think outwardly, to remember to think about others. And the title for today's talk, wow, how would it help you if I spoke? Booming voice, or no, great. The title for our talk is Spirit-Filled Compassion for the Community. So that's the title for what we're talking about today, and we're going through Thessalonians, sort of linking these chapters in Thessalonians to different aspects of this idea of everyday mission. I heard a quote once. Someone said, the church is unique or unusual in that it's an organisation that exists for the benefit of its non-members, which I thought, that's a very interesting idea. In fact, that's a really good way to think about what the church is. It's something we exist for those outside the church. That's why we exist. And it's a different way of thinking. It requires a shift in our mindset, because so much of our culture is geared towards personal benefit. What's in it for me? Particularly if you think about joining a group or being a part of an organization, it's, you know, what do I get out of it? How does this benefit me? And it requires a different way of thinking, to think about being part of an organisation that exists to benefit those who aren't in the organisation. There's a strong sense sometimes of what faith is about, what church is about. It's about me. It's about helping me, sorting me out. But no, the Bible actually says we need to live outwardly. We need to be looking outward. In 1 Thessalonians, the chapters we've already looked at, and we'll go on to look at, Paul talks quite a bit about how we're supposed to relate to the world around us, about how we're supposed to love others, how we're supposed to build communities, how we're supposed to be courageous in what we talk about. These are some of the things we've touched on. But to want to actually make a difference in the world, to want to help others, to want to be outward looking, you kind of have to start from a position of actually caring about others. You have to care about what other people are like and what's happening in their lives. You have to think about others. And Paul commends the Thessalonians. He thinks they're doing quite a good job of thinking about others, of caring about others. He's already mentioned it in chapter 1. And in the passage that Richard read out, he again says, look, you guys, I don't need to write to you about love. I don't need to command you to love, because you guys have learned how to love. God has taught you himself. You're doing a good job of loving others. So Paul commends them for their sort of outward-looking attitude, their desire to love and bless others. But he says, just, you know, you're doing a good job, do more. Do more and more. Do a bit more. Go a bit further in your love and compassion for others. It's like Paul's never heard of compassion fatigue. Now, I feel like compassion fatigue is a thing, that, you know, you can care too much. And I think in this day and age, it's something that can happen because we're so constantly aware of the need around us. Now, I've noticed one of the things, you may have noticed it, I've noticed there are various places you go to shop where you pay with a card or you do it online, and a message will pop up saying, do you want to round up to the nearest pound? A charitable donation. You know, like if you're paying £9.99, do you want to give 1p? To a charity, or if you're paying £9.03, do you want to give 97p to a charity? Now, I think, hey, that's quite a good idea. It's quite a good way of, you know, a little bit of making a difference without it sort of being noticeable. I think that's quite good. But it's like constantly we are being reminded that there are needs And there are lots of charities that need our time and energy and so on. And we can feel a bit overwhelmed. We can get worn out. And the temptation when we're worn out by this constant call to care and to have compassion on others is to actually dial back on the compassion, to stop caring, to turn the caring down a bit. And I think perhaps even more so in recent times, because again, I feel like there's a pressure on us once again to think about ourselves. If you sat in a queue this weekend trying to get petrol, you may have sat there thinking, these people, they don't need petrol. I need petrol. These people don't really need petrol. And the sort of compassion drains away and we stop caring and we become irritated and angry because people are blocking us from getting what we want or doing what we want. And Paul comes along and says, you guys are doing a great job of loving people. Go further. Do more and more. Now, it's quite interesting. Now, the title, Spirit-Filled Compassion for the Community, is something I think the Bible does teach us. But when I was going through this passage, I was kind of struggling a bit, wrestling a bit with Paul, because there are ways of reading this passage where Paul could be seeming to say, look, you don't need to care about the community. You just need to care about those closest to you. For example, when he talks a lot about loving and how well the Thessalonians are doing in loving each other. But he stresses, the term Richard used, brotherly love. Or he says, you guys are doing a good job of loving your brothers and sisters or loving God's family. In short, the Thessalonians are doing a good job of loving those inside the church. And I'm wanting to talk about loving those outside the church. So, this passage was not very helpful for me in many ways. And in fact, Paul goes even further than that. In verses 11 and 12 at the end, it almost sounds like a contradiction to the idea of having spirit-filled compassion for the community around you. I'll just read those verses again. Make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to mind your own business, and to work with your hands just as we told you. That sounds good to me, except the bit about working with your hands, maybe. I've done that for a while. And I much prefer sitting in my study writing sermons. But I do work with my hands. I type. But minding your own business, leading a quiet life, that sounds quite good. It sounds almost like Paul saying, just mind your own business. Don't bother reaching out to the world. Don't have compassion on the world. Live a quiet life. Don't worry about them. Keep your head down. But thankfully for me and my sermon preparation, I think Paul's not quite that naive. He's not quite that naive to think that you can follow Jesus and it not impact people around you. In fact, he's already said in this book in Thessalonians, in chapter 1 and chapter 2, he said a couple of times, look, you guys used to live a certain way, now you live a different way, and people notice. People have noticed. In verse chapter 1, he says, that you are an example to those around you. People around you are noticing that you're different. In chapter 2, he says, you guys used to live a certain way. You live differently now, and it got you into trouble. It actually attracted persecution. So I think Paul can't be saying, if you're a Christian, you can just keep your head down and not think about what's going on around you because, and no one will bother you. You don't bother them. I think Paul knows. Paul knows from his own life. He's in his letters, he's constantly saying, actually, when you change, when you decide you're going to follow Jesus, when you decide you're going to live differently, you can't help but impact the world around you. You can't help but attract attention. You can't help but make people sit up and take notice. And whether that's a good thing or a bad thing depends on them. But it's never going to be kind of neutral. It's never just going to be neutral. And, I remain convinced from my own life and from reading and all these other kind of things that if a man or woman who genuinely commits their life to Christ, who genuinely lives a different life in the name of Christ, half the people they meet are gonna want to follow them and the other half are gonna want to kill them. I think that's generally how it works, but you won't get sort of a neutral reaction. So Paul, when he says these verses 11 and 12, he goes on to say, so that your daily life, in verse 12, may win the respect of outsiders, and so that you will not be dependent on anybody. So Paul's not kind of pretending that you can mind your own business and no one will care. He's saying, live in such a way to attract the right kind of attention, to give people a good impression of what it means to follow God, what it means to be a disciple of Jesus. You should stand out for the right reasons, not for the wrong reasons. You should actually, far from saying, you know, don't care about people outside, he's saying you should be conscious of what you're communicating to them by the way you live. The way you live says something about what you believe and about your faith, and you should make sure you're communicating the right message, because God cares. God cares about what you are communicating about him. God cares what impression you are giving others of who he is. So think about how your life impacts others, how your life impacts the world around you, the local community. Is your life one that models God's compassion for the world around you, for others? And I think Paul is saying to the Thessalonians, yeah, you guys are doing this. You guys are living a life that models God's love to the Thessalonians. I think for us, particularly for Christians, it can be tempting. Well, there are two Old Testament stories I just want to briefly mention. You may know the story of Noah from Genesis 6 and 7, and it's kind of a well-known story about how God sees there's so much sort of wickedness and evil and corruption in the world, and he says, I'm going to flood it, but Noah, you're all right. You're all right by me. You're doing the right thing, so I'm going to save you. You can build a boat, and you can be kept safe. And I think sometimes the temptation for Christians is to kind of adopt this Noah attitude. You know, we're okay, God likes us, God, but everyone out there, God doesn't like them, God hates them, and God's going to deal with them. But we're safe, we're fine, here in our boat, protected. But there's another someone in the Old Testament, in the book of Genesis, who kind of embodies a different attitude. And this person tends to be the one that throughout the story of Israel is held up as an example, as the kind of person to follow. And that's Abraham. Abraham's attitude is very different. A similar event happens to Abraham. God says, look, there's these cities, Sodom and Gomorrah, full of wickedness, full of corruption, full of evil, and I'm going to destroy them. But Abraham, you're all right. I'm going to keep my promise to you. I'm going to look after you. And far from kind of withdrawing, Abraham remains before God. And God says, what's on your mind, Abraham? And Abraham says, well, God, we need to talk about this plan of yours. Now, Abraham has family in Sodom and Gomorrah, so he's obviously concerned about that. But it doesn't end up just being a conversation about, you know, look after my family. It's about saving the whole city. Abraham is someone who comes to God and has this discussion about, God, you should have compassion on these people. And there's a temptation for us to be like Noah and sort of withdraw, have no compassion on the world outside, when really we should be more like Abraham and be concerned with what's going on in the world outside, to pray for the world outside, to care and ask God to spare the city. But how can we do this? How can we do this without getting burdened or worn down by this compassion fatigue, by this pressure of always having to care? Well, I don't know if there's an easy answer to that. I don't know if it's easy to do that. It's not. It's hard. But I think there are some things we can do to help ourselves keep this right attitude, to have this, if you like, this spirit-filled compassion for the community. In the passage that Richard read, 1 Thessalonians 4, in verses 3 to 6, Paul sort of takes a moment to talk about our own personal holiness, if you like, the way we should live, the way we should act. And he says, you know, be self-controlled. Take control of your body. Don't use it for sexual immorality. Be disciplined in how you live. You know, being someone who's disciplined about how you live, about how you use your body, about the choices you make, is someone who is evidence that God is at work in your life. And we might say, yeah, okay, Paul, we get that. Be disciplined, make good choices, you know, be self-controlled, avoid sexual immorality, all these kind of things. Yeah, it's about how I use my body. It's about the things I do, the choices I make. But even when Paul's talking about this thing, which seems to be primarily about ourselves and sort of personal responsibility, he says in verse 6, but make sure you, I'll read the passage, that's probably, verse 6, and in this matter, so he's talking about being self-controlled, no one should wrong his brother or sister or take advantage of them. So even when Paul's talking about sort of these very things about personal discipline, he says, but this too relates to how you treat others. In short, your own personal holiness, your decision about how you use your body and what you do and those personal choices you make also relates to how you treat others. Even when you're thinking about just yourself, you have to think about how you impact others, how you treat others. We may think Paul's telling us to be self-controlled just in how we behave ourselves, but he's saying be self-controlled in how you treat others, in how you relate to others. So there's a call to holiness, but Paul says, you know, holiness is also about treating others well. That is one what it means to be holy. Not just to be someone who is sort of personally pure and righteous and all those things, but also someone who treats others well. That is a mark of holiness. And I think we need to remember that. We can remember that, and we can help ourselves by remembering that the way we treat others is a mark of our own holiness, our own relationship with God. And there are all kinds of things we might do to nurture our own personal relationship with God, our own personal holiness. We may pray, read the Bible, fasting, all those kind of things. But we can introduce those kind of disciplines in our lives to help us love others as well. So an obvious one is when we pray and when we set time aside to be with God and to come before him, we should make sure, I think it's a good habit to get into, to make sure that a part of that time is spent praying for others, not just for yourself, not just for what's going on in your own life. Personally, I find that the easiest thing to pray about, the things that are going on in my life, the things that sort of matter most to me. So it's good for me as a discipline to remember, you know what, I need to pray for others. I need to remember the needs of others. When I'm sitting there in this queue, in this waiting for petrol, here's a chance to stop and pray for all these people in the cars behind me. Well, not the people behind me, because, you know, I'm ahead of them. But people in front of me, I can pray for them. I can think about their needs. I can think about what's going on in their lives. And I don't know them, but God does. And I can pray for them. And you develop in yourself compassion. You build compassion into your life. Some of us may like set time aside to read the Bible or to do other things like that. Maybe set some time aside each day to just do an act of compassion for another person. Something that loves another person. Some of us may fast. How about not just not eating, but how about donating the food you don't eat to a food bank? Or something like that, building in these disciplines that force us to love others. They're not just thinking about how we can have disciplines that sort of develop our own personal holiness, but how we can love others, and through love we can develop this spirit of compassion. Now, I don't think this is easy. I think, as I said, it's difficult, and it's not an easy time to remember to have compassion on those around. But as Paul says, you're doing well, just keep going. Do that little bit more. Don't give up. Don't let compassion fatigue set in. Because we need to come from a position of remembering that compassion for others is actually a mark of holiness. Is one of the things that marks us out as being a holy people, is how we love others. We can ask God to fill us with compassion for others, for those around us, those near us that we can reach out to help. And we can choose to care about others, to not let that kind of Noah mentality get a foothold in our life, but instead choose an Abraham mindset of caring about what's going on in the places around us. And ultimately, we need to remember and take hold of that truth that we have been saved for the benefit of those who haven't yet been saved. I'll just pray for a moment. Father, thank you for the compassion you had on us. Thank you for the way you meet our needs. Thank you for the way that you love us. And I pray that that may stir in us compassion for others. Lord, help us in those moments where we're tempted to not have compassion on others, where we're tempted to stop caring. Father, help us to find ways that help us to keep caring. Help us to find things we can do in our lives that grow our love for others rather than shrink it. And Father, I pray those moments where we feel like we just can't give anymore, those moments where we feel like, you know what, I can't love anymore. Father, through your grace, may your Spirit fill us and we may find ourselves refreshed by Spirit-filled compassion for our community. Amen.